We hear a lot about how we feel about the Detroit Pistons offseason in the Pistons community. We're all sharing our opinions. But I bring someone on from outside the Detroit area, a very popular person in the NBA community, to give us his perspective on what the Detroit Pistons look like, what their offseason was like, Kate Cunningham, and all of that on today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to our YouTube channel, at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's the best way to support the podcast. We're on our way to 5,000 subscribers. Or if you're listening to this on one of the podcast platforms, whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on, leave us a five-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. So like I told you guys, in the cold intro, obviously we talk all the time, this is a Pistons podcast, about what our thoughts, I bring people on within the Pistons community, about what the thoughts are about the Pistons, their offseason, some of the moves they make, some of their players, etc. But I think it's a good idea every now and then, really in general, to always keep a perspective from, try to get some perspective from outside your team's community, outside your team's fan base, so you can try to be not as biased. And that's what we're going to do today. We're bringing on one of the more popular people in the NBA community. That's Josh Eberle. You can find him over on Spotify Live, where he hosts live NBA chats. You can find all kinds of words from him on Hoop Mag, NBA Canada, Sporting News, Fan Sided, all kinds of stuff. And also, he's a great Twitter follow as well on Twitter. Josh, how you doing, man? Thank you for coming on today.
I'm doing well. I've got both my butt cheeks and on my toes, so doing extremely well, and hoping no one in the Detroit area is coming after me.
No, you're going to be good. I think we'll be straight. We'll be straight. So, obviously, I think we'll start off with the Pistons franchise player. I think he's obviously what's brought more eyes to the Pistons. I don't know if the Pistons didn't have Kate Cunningham, how many eyes would be really paying attention to the Pistons anyways. Kate Cunningham obviously has brought a lot of energy to the city of Detroit. He played extremely well this past season, especially as the season wore down. But he did not win Rookie of the Year. I'm kind of going to throw you to the fire on this one to start off the first question. But just from outside Detroit area, obviously everyone within Detroit thinks he should have won Rookie of the Year. They're very, you know, we ride very strong for our guys. But it was a good race between Cade, Scottie Barnes, and Evan Mobley. From your perspective, do you think they're right Rookie of the Year won? Do you have any disagreements with it? What are your thoughts with how that award chase went?
Yeah, I don't think the right rookie won. I mean, again, I'll preface this by saying Rookie of the Year is a whatever award. I know it matters. Apparently, it matters an incredible amount. I think last year was the most supercharged Rookie of the Year race I have ever seen. The vitriol from Raptors fans and Cavs fans and Pistons fans over it was like next level. So I guess it's good people care. But I really think it should have been Evan Mobley. I think given how long the NBA season is and like how as fans we continue to want players to show up and how anti – you know, player management, so people are, and you want to give fans a reason to show up every night. I think Evan Mobley was the most consistent rookie on a team that was successful. I would have given it to Evan Mobley. That said, I thought it was close. Like, I don't begrudge anyone for voting for Cade Cunningham or Scottie Barnes. So I really, like, I don't have a hot take on this. It's funny that you bring this up because I think the week before the results were released, somebody asked me who I would vote for, same as you. I said Mobley, but I'm from Canada, and Canadians were so mad at me. Like, take that flag out of your Twitter. Like, get out of this country. We hate you. I hope you die. And I was like, over a fake Rookie of the Year vote? Like, I've made my bed many times on social media, podcasts, et cetera. But that was like the weirdest thing I've ever received death threats for sure.
No, yeah, I'll echo that. The Rookie of the Year race and just talking about it, it was probably the most toxic it's been in years. The only time I can ever remember it being as toxic as it was Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons. And that was because of the whole argument about whether he should have been actually considered a rookie, all that kind of stuff. But yes, last year it definitely got pretty toxic between the fan bases. I would know. I've been I've been attacked in the comment section by Raptor fans quite a bit for my thoughts on it. For what it's worth, obviously, I think Cade Cunningham probably should. That's just my opinion. I feel like Cade should have won it. But if I'm trying to be as biased as possible, I do understand that Cade struggled for the first month of the season. That probably hurt him down. I thought his last 2 months of the season, he was clearly the best rookie in the league. And I also, if I had to pick someone besides Cade, I would have went Evan Mobley. I thought Evan Mobley was the most consistent rookie from start of the season to the end of the year. And that's where my vote would have went. But again, all three players in the Rookie of the Year race, I think they're all going to be great. I think they all were worthy of winning Rookie of the Year. They could have won Rookie of the Year in any other year. So just tells you how good of a draft class this past year's draft really, or I guess I should say two seasons now, two drafts ago, draft class really is going to be. But outside of the Rookie of the Year race, just what's your overall thoughts on Cade Cunningham? Everyone in Detroit, we've already billed him as the franchise guy. He's going to be a future superstar. He's going to be the guy that brings Detroit back to success. Is that how people outside of Detroit are looking at it? Is that at least how you're looking at it from outside of Detroit? Do you see Cade Cunningham as that type of player?
Yeah, you know what? I do like doing the team-specific pods because it's interesting. Like, I'm not from your market. It's always – I mean, I think fans are always higher on their guys or lower than the masses in general. I think there's probably due to the fact that he plays on the Pistons, there's a lot of, like, wait and see with Cade still, like in NBA circles. Like, I do not think Cade is viewed anywhere close to what, like, Zion was viewed as Luka, as some of, like, the stars that we've seen come up, you know, following their rookie year. I feel like Cade is still, you know, on a national scale, still not there. So, I mean, not to say that it's deserved or not deserved, but I don't think the hype level is anywhere close. For me, personally, coming out of the draft, man, I'm not a draft guy. You know this. Like, I watch so much NBA, I won't pretend to watch enough college basketball to have real opinions. I spend a lot of time talking to people who were doing that scouting during the year. And, like, the two comparisons that kept getting brought back to me were, like, Nick Batum, who could move a lot better, and Luka Light. And I was like, that is a huge, huge range of player. Watching Cade in the NBA, I kind of see where people were coming from with the size, the way he plays full court, the kind of indecisive shooting stroke that he's got to work on if he wants to get to that next level. I think Cade's a really, really good player. If we're talking about like the top 5 to 10 blue chips in the NBA, I don't think he's that. And right. I don't know if that's what Pistons fans are thinking, but that's kind of where I'm at.
All right. So with Cade Cunningham, the Pistons have now a young core. They've surrounded him with, or somewhat of a young core. They have about 6 or 7 guys. So if you had to take a guess, do you think Cade Cunningham will be the best player on a future, let's say, contender team for the Pistons in a few years? Or do you think the Pistons still need to find that guy?
That's a good cue. I think he could be the best player on contending as in title contending or like competitive winning a playoff series.
Title contending. Let's say like at least winning a playoff series and competing for like Eastern Conference berths, that kind of thing. Maybe like a, like, I don't want to say Celtics, but like a Hawks year when they break through the Eastern Conference finals 1 year and you think maybe they could make it to the finals kind of thing.
Yeah. I think if that's your bar, Cade could be that guy. I think Cade could be the best player on a really good team that in the right set of circumstances could have a run like the Hawks or like the Blazers did with Dame a few years ago when things broke right and they went to the conference finals. I don't know that Cade Cunningham is the number one guy on a championship team. And again, I don't mean that to be an insult. There's like 5 guys in any given NBA season who can be that. So that's a very, very high bar. I think he's just below that. I still think he's the best prospect on this team. I still think he has an incredibly high ceiling, but like figuring out that shooting stroke and not getting stuck in like, we're at a weird point with NBA basketball engines where you don't want them to be one-dimensional. You want them to be expert playmakers, getting other guys involved, but you want them to be able to score at 3 levels. And I don't know that Cade does either of those at a high enough level to be the number one guy on the team. I think he does both of them at a high level, not an elite level.
All right, fair enough. When we come back, we'll talk about the overall young core of the Pistons outside of Cade Cunningham, what they're putting together, what Troy Weaver has put together, and what's Josh's thoughts on some of the other young guys on this team. But first, I got to give you guys a little bit of some life advice. You're hanging out with some friends and putting back a few drinks. A few come, a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. But nah, you live nearby. You can make it home. It's going to be okay. It's no big deal. What are the odds you'll get pulled over anyway? Even so, what's the worst that could possibly happen? Your insurance goes up, you lose your license for a little bit, you lose your job, you can find a new one, you tow your car, or you could potentially kill someone. Everyone knows about the risk of driving drunk. The results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So if you think you're going to be okay to drive after just a few drinks, please think again. It's not safe. Just play it safe. Plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Again, don't think to yourself, what's the worst possible thing that could happen? Oh, I just lose my license for a little bit. Oh, my insurance just happens to go up. No, you could get yourself physically hurt, or you could really kill somebody. Driving under the influence behind the wheel is never okay. Again, play it safe and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. And it's the best way to support the podcast on our way to 5,000 subscribers. Or if you listen to one of the podcast platforms, leave a 5-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, Josh. So obviously, Cade Cunningham's leading their way here so far in Detroit. He's their face of the franchise right now. And before they got Cade, before Weaver took over this team, they had Blake Griffin. They had Jeremy Grant. They had Derrick Rose. They had all kinds of guys. Bruce Brown. They had all kinds of guys on this team. And he completely flipped this team in a matter of just a few months. There's not a single player left on this roster from when he took over. There was only one guy on the roster left after a year, and that was Sekou Doumbouya, and he was let go after a single year. So Troy Weaver has completely flipped this roster and has somewhat built it. I don't want to say built in his image, because I don't think this is anywhere near the final product of what he's trying to build. But he has gotten in. He's brought in guys that he likes and brought in, quote unquote, his guys. So let's just start off with this question. Outside of Cade, who is your favorite prospect on this team outside of Cade Cunningham?
First of all, shouts to Sekou. I was here for like the I took great interest at a distance on the Sekou versus Dwayne Casey battle Pistons Twitter ad. That feels like so long ago. That's crazy.
Exactly.
I think other than Cade, the most interesting prospect on the roster is Ivy. I don't know that he'll be the best player, because I do really like Sadiq Bey, but I think you got to imagine that the team is looking at him as the other guy who could be a blue chip player. And I would be curious too, like, did Weaver truly feel that Ivy was his guy, or did he feel fortunate that Ivy fell to him, or did he feel you can't pass up on him because like that, I think Ivy was a guy, you know, he might be the most polarizing top lottery guy, where like there were people who thought he should have gone one, who he's incredible, who he plays similar to Ja Morant, he has X, Y, and Z going for him. Then there are people who thought, you know, he was spotty, he was inconsistent. Yeah, he had a lot of a lack of spacing in college, but you should have seen more. And he went out against St. Peter's in one of the uglier playoff moments for a high lottery pick ever. I mean, that probably squashed any chance he had of going one or two in the draft. So, I mean, I'm just curious. I just want to see it play out. I don't want to make crazy projections, because, like I said earlier, I didn't watch enough of him in college. But he's very interesting in that if he came out and he was a 25-5 guy right away next to Cade and blew the doors off, similar to Tyreke Evans's rookie year, that wouldn't surprise me. And if he was a total dud and couldn't find his shot in the NBA and looked lost out there, that wouldn't surprise me. So I'm really curious to see what he looks like.
Yeah, I think Jaden Ivey is going to be incredibly interesting, and I think even if he struggles this year, I think he's going to be a fun player to watch, someone that makes the Pistons more fun to watch. My prediction for Jaden Ivey, I've talked about this on the podcast a lot. I don't think he's going to come out the gates just blowing everybody by. I think he's going to struggle out the gates. I think he's going to struggle a little bit his rookie season. I don't think that's going to waver me about what he can be in the future. I'm not really concerned about that. But I do see things that I think – at least I think he's going to get better as the season goes on. But I think he's going to struggle in the in-between game, in-between area when it comes to shot-making and also decision-making in the NBA. I do think that the take rule being taken out, basically, I think that really helps a player like Jaden Ivey a lot. I think he'll feast in transition, feast in fast break opportunities. But yeah, I do think that I don't think he'll be coming in averaging 20 points a game for the Pistons. I think he'll probably average around 14 points a game this year for the Pistons, struggle a little bit. His shot will probably be inconsistent. He'll probably have some questionable decision-making out the gate. But I think that's part of the reason why probably he fell, like you mentioned, part of why he fell to five. And that's things that they have to develop within him. Do I think they can do it? Yeah, I think he can develop that. I think he'll have I think he fits well off ball next to Cade. Cade will be able to create advantages for him to let him attack a recovering defense, a recovering help defense, let him just use his athleticism to really beat guys. But I don't expect a ton from him his rookie season. But I still think that he's probably the most – I think he's probably the most interesting prospect outside of Cade for sure on the team. But you mentioned the other guy's name that I think a lot of fans would still go to, and this is a player that fans have – I think Pistons fans overrate him a little bit. I was much lower on this player last offseason, but after this past season, he did prove me wrong in some areas. So I'm a little bit higher on him now. Still not as high on him as Pistons fans, but I'm relatively higher on him now. And that's Sadiq Bey. You mentioned him. He scored 50 points in a game against the Orlando Magic. Now, yes, it's the Orlando Magic, but he dropped 50 points last season in a game against them. What's your thoughts on Sadiq Bey from an outside perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe from what you're telling me, like Sadiq Bey for Pistons fans is sort of like OG Anunoby for Raptors fans, where like there's this great belief that like growth is linear, and you see a guy with length in today's NBA and you think, oh, the sky's the limit. That's not necessarily always the case for guys who are still developing a lot of basic skills. I think Sadiq Bey is a very good player. I think he's a wing that you want on a championship team. I don't think he's going to be a superstar. I don't think he's going to be an all NBA player or anything like that. But that being said, I think he's the type of player that every team needs to win a title in today's game. And it's great that they have a piece like that already installed. Because Ivy's really interesting too, in between them, because I wonder, like, I still think shooting is underrated by the general NBA community. I think shooting decides just about everything. And I wonder, between Ivy and Cade, like there's a little bit of a worry for me in creating their own shots consistently. But like Bay also being a pretty good floor spacer already, like helps open that up a little bit. I think he's a really good fit there. I definitely still think he's the third most interesting prospect of the three, but he's probably the safest in that, like, no matter what team, you know, no matter who your engine is, you know, no matter who else you bring in there, Sadiq basically will play the three and the four for you and have a role.
Yeah, and I think that right there, that's where I was with him last offseason. I basically didn't have him being anything higher than that this past offseason. I thought he was a guy, like you said, that could start on any team. He could be a 10-year starter, just basically hitting threes and playing defense on the other side of the floor. He has that base level to where he's not going to find himself out the league, find himself out of a rotation. Yes. He has the very base floor that's going to keep him in a starting lineup, I feel like, probably for 10 years. However, this past season, the Pistons tried – and I think they might even try even more this year to try and see if he can branch out to doing more than that. You got very mixed results this past season. The first 26 games of the year, he was horrific. It was. I don't think you could have imagined starting as bad as he did the first 26 games of this past season. But he picked it up the last 56 games of the year, started to show a little bit of improvement over those games. Still shot 45% on all two-pointers. So that's a little it's very mixed results with him being more than just a three. And he's not even really that good defensively, by the way. That's something he has to improve on too. But his prototype, which is a 3-and-D, we don't know yet if he can be more than just that. It looks like the Pistons are going to try, though, to try to see if he can become more than that. They gave him the keys last year to try to do it. Go ahead.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but that's the thing where, like, okay, you got to look, because you're a team in a year of development. You're figuring things out. There were some injuries, but like, Sadiq Bey does not have the dribble drive game to be a featured player offensively on a night-to-night basis. Not at all. Don't believe it one bit. Defensively, I agree with you. Doesn't hold his own. Doesn't make the reads. Doesn't play the passing lanes well enough. But, like, there's just something about a guy with that size and that athleticism where you think, like, as time comes on, as the fundamentals come together, as he puts in the work, like, he is always going to be able to hold. At a minimum, he's going to be able to hold his own defensively because of the tools that he has. And I guess that's not always true. We've seen that not pan out with really athletic, high draft picks in the past. But, like, I'm really optimistic about any wing with that size and athleticism figuring it out and being a plus defensive player, not necessarily like a shutdown all defense guy. But yeah, to your point there.
No, yeah, I agree. I do think that Sadiq will get there. And for what it's worth, basically all young guys suck on defense. Like Evan Mobley is a rare example of a guy who just is amazing defensively as a young guy. Young guys usually suck on defense. I expect Sadiq to become at least average and, like you said, hold his own defensively. And that's why I think he'll be a starter in the NBA for 10-plus years, because he's going to be able to shoot outside shots. He's going to be able to hold his own defensively. So I think he can – that's his base level. However, the Pistons tried it last year. I think they're probably going to try it again this year to see if he can do more. We'll see how it looks. Again, he looked a little bit better as the season went on. He started cutting out these long twos. He started taking the ball to the rim, started using his body and his physical – his physique to really try to draw free throws. I think if he can do that, he might have a chance, because he was drawing around 4 free throws a game, I think, over the last 50 games of the season. If he can get that up higher to around like 5.5 attempts, I think that maybe he could do something. But it's going to be interesting to see. Like you said, the Pistons are in a position right now where they're just looking. They need to exhaust all options with everybody and make sure and see if these guys can be anything more than what they are. Sadiq's one of them. Obviously, Jaden Ivey will be one of them. We'll talk about a few more of these guys when we come back. But first, I have to tell you guys about one of our sponsors. This one is going to be BetOnline.net. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check out all your sports betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports wagering information, from live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts. They have you absolutely covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends and action today. And if you head over to BetOnline.net right now and you go to the basketball section, you see who's the favorite to win the championship next year. They have the Boston Celtics as the favorite. I do not agree with that. I don't know if this has to do with the KD possibly being traded there. I don't know if there should be higher favorites than the Milwaukee Bucks. So I don't know if I agree with BetOnline in this scenario, but that's the kind of thing you can do over at BetOnline.net. You can already get a head start on your NBA season at BetOnline.net today, or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends and action today. BetOnline, where the game starts. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button over at the YouTube channel. We're on our way to 5,000 subscribers, or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, leave us a 5-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, Jess, we've talked about Cade. We've talked about the overall vision of Cade moving forward, what you feel like his vision or his future is in Detroit. We talked a little bit about Jaden Ivey, a little bit about Sadiq Bey. But there's another guy that the Pistons got this offseason, and I see a few places. I see Bleacher Report. I saw ESPN. A few places saying that the Pistons had one of the best offseasons in the NBA this past year. And it wasn't just Jaden Ivey. They also got Jalen Duren. What's your overall thoughts on Jalen Duren? Do you have any idea about Duren? What do you think about him?
I don't have a strong take either way. I didn't watch enough of him at Memphis. I'm not sure. Like, it obviously was a guy they were excited about. He went a fair bit higher than I saw him mocked heading into the draft. But yeah, no, I don't have too many strong takes on Jalen Duren yet. Wait and see. How does Detroit, let me throw it back to you, how does Detroit feel about him versus Isaiah Stewart?
I think a lot of fans are probably higher at this point on Jalen Duren, which I think they should be, than Isaiah Stewart going into the season. However, that does not – I still think they like – I like, as a fan, I think they love Isaiah Stewart more than Jalen Duren.
Okay, interesting.
Where do you fall? Where do you find yourself falling on that?
I think the pick of Duren to me felt like Weaver saying, like, Stewart is a fun player who might be in our rotation, but he's not our future guy. That's how that pick looked like to me from the outside. Again, not to speak too much about what I think about Duren's game, I don't know, but that's what that pick felt like to me. Like, we don't have our guy in the middle. We think Duren can be it. We don't think Stewart can be it. So I think Isaiah Stewart might be walking the Montrezl Harrell path in the next few years, but that's just my, like, shot in the dark here.
Well, this is what I'll say about that. I think that you're probably right. I think that's absolutely probably what they looked at. For example, I think the numbers back up the fact that what you just brought up. So, for example, let's go over the final. Where is it? Basketball Reference is taking forever to load this up. So, okay, the final 23 games of this past season, Cade Cunningham averaged 20 points a game. He had 6 assists a game, 5.7 rebounds, shot 44% from the floor. If you even just go over the last after the All-Star break, so that's going to be the last, I think, 21 games or so. He averaged 21-6-6, and that came with the arrival of Marvin Bagley, who finally put pressure on the rim for the Pistons, gave Cade a lob threat, a guy who can actually, again, put pressure on the rim, finish around the basket, someone that actually that defense is feared around the basket. He didn't have that the entire season, and that was because Isaiah Stewart just wasn't good at it at all. Isaiah Stewart was a good offensive rebounder, but he was terrible at putbacks. He was one of the worst putback guys in the NBA. He ranked in the 13th percentile this past season on putbacks. Around the basket, he was one of the worst finishers in the entire NBA. This past season, he ranked in the 24th percentile on finishing around the basket. That did not include post-ups. So including all that with the fact that Isaiah Stewart struggled screening as well. He doesn't do well in the DHO. He doesn't put a lot of pressure on the rim. And along with the fact that his rookie season showed that he had a little bit of promise as an outside shooter at the end of the season. He completely scrapped that the past season. He wasn't even trying to shoot this past season. A lot of that hurt Cade tremendously, and it completely changed as soon as Marvin Bagley arrived. And I think that was enough for Torrey Weaver to see, hey, okay, we need this lob threat guy who's not going to soak up touches, guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands. He's going to rim protect. He's going to block shots. And on the other end, he's going to put incredible pressure on the rim. He's going to dunk the ball almost every chance he gets. He's going to catch lobs. And it seems like he has a hidden talent, or at least a raw talent right now, of passing the basketball out of the short roll. That sounds like something that he was able to do in college a little bit. I saw a lot of it in the summer league. That's going to be interesting. But I definitely think that they're looking at Duren as the future big guy over Isaiah Stewart, which is why I actually want to segue this a little bit. I don't know if you have something to say, but you can respond to that with this question as well. They're kind of segueing Isaiah Stewart into a four. It sounds like they're going to make Isaiah Stewart a four this season, and they really are going to try to bank on him being able to hit outside shots.
So
do you – go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, finish your question, my bad.
No, my overall question was just going to be, do you think that that's something that actually could possibly happen from an outside point of view? Do you think that's like – that makes sense to try to do? Do you think they're setting players up to fail doing that kind of thing? So they just accept Isaiah Stewart as a backup five instead of trying to force him into a – possible starting four position, which maybe he's able to do it. Who knows? Maybe he's able to pull it off. What's your overall take on the Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren, and everything I just brought up?
So a couple thoughts. Like in doing a little research for this pod, I was looking at the back end of the season, and like he was taking just over 1 3 a game the last 20 of the season. And he shot like 52% on those, which is an encouraging number, and still shot under 50% from the floor, with the majority of us being at the rim on putbacks, etc. So yeah, he's not an encouraging player. Like, I'm not really high on Isaiah Stewart. I think he's a fan favorite type guy. I think he's got like that personality that people enjoy. But also, anytime a guy can't rim run, and we're talking 2 or 3 steps jump, knowing what's coming before it's happening, like anytime he's not efficient in that role, like you got to think about the reaction time on defense, not knowing what's happening, moving those feet. It's not a good combo. Like, that's not a guy that you want to play in the NBA. Him going to the power forward spot, don't love it. If he's not fast enough and quick enough on his feet to play at center, it's not going to work out on the perimeter in small ball NBA at the four. I think, again, like he's going to head into that Montrezl Harrell zone where he's going to be like an off-the-bench guy coming in as a big. Again, he's got to clean up the ball a little better at the rim, but I think that's his future. I am curious from the Duren, and I heard this a lot about Duren. Like, obviously, he's got a lot of potential to be that big guy, do some rim running for you. But I kind of thought maybe Bagley – his ultimate position might have been the five. So that was like something I like. And Bagley had his best, by just about every metric you can find, his best stint as a basketball player in that 20 games or so with the Pistons. I kind of felt like it, maybe his future or his best position would be the five. So I wonder, you know, how Weaver sees that and how those two are going to get rotated in and out this year.
Well, I think that's an interesting thing to wonder about, and something that we're all wondering about as well. But I think what is going on here is, one, the thing with Isaiah Stewart is offensively, so far he's just been a wreck. He hasn't been able to finish around the rim. He's not a good passer at the five position. He was struggling with screening for the majority of the season. He got a little bit better with being – he found a niche as a highway screener towards the end of the season, but you can't highway screen every single time. You have to be able to set good screens. You can't just highway screen every single time. But so they're trying to – they take that sample size that you talked about from beyond the arc over the last 20 or so games when he was shooting over 1 a game, and they believe that he might be able to do that more on higher volume. Do I think it could happen? I question it a lot, but I'm willing to see if it can do it because the Pistons are developing anyways this season. It's a rebuild. Might as well try it, I guess. The thing with Isaiah Stewart is that he's really good defensively for the Pistons. I believe there was a stat, ESPN actually had it on like a graphic or something like during one of the games at the end of the year. He's one of the most switched big guys in the entire NBA. He does well switching on the guards at the perimeter. But the problem is that you're just so bad offensively, you can't it's hard to make up for that with just that. So the idea, which sounds like what the Pistons are doing going back to Bagley, is that Bagley, yes, he had by far, I think, his best stint in Detroit. He was finishing around 87% of his buckets around the rim from 0 to 3 feet. Basically, anytime he touched the ball around the rim, it was either you follow him or he was dunking on you or finishing. He has incredible touch around the rim, incredible offensive talent, a guy who can catch lobs. I think he can just dominate the sideline of a court and score 15 points just roaming the sideline, just on cuts, dunker spot, lobs, all those kind of things. I think he can dominate that area. However, he's just so bad defensively that he can't play the five. And he can't switch. He can't play drop coverage. He's just horrific defensively. So I think the idea that they're going with, and I can understand it, is it looks like they might be starting Isaiah Stewart at the four and then Bagley at the five. Let Bagley run five on offense, Isaiah Stewart spot up, and then on defense, let Stu play the five position on that side, play with the bigger guys, let him bang down low, and then let Bagley play the four position on that end. Will that work? I don't know. I'm interested to actually see it more play out with Durant and Bagley, because Bagley does have a singular season when he was a 34% shooter from deep. He shot 40% from the corners. One season, he was on, I think, like 34 games. He got hurt. His entire career really is a small sample size, so it's tough. But I'm more interested in the Bagley-Durant. But I think that's the overall idea with Bagley, is that, yes, he brings us something offensively, but he's so bad defensively, we need another guy next to him that can, like, kind of hide those weaknesses and kind of make up for that area that he can't do if we're going to play him.
Yeah, it's I think the Pistons on a whole are in kind of a fun spot this year. I'm not even like being facetious or trying to cater to your audience, but like you have a lot of guys where you don't know who they are yet and you have no expectations this year, right? Like this morning I checked it up. Bodog has the Pistons at fifth from the bottom for wins projection next year. I saw 26.5. I actually like you're over there, to be honest. But I think this is a team where like you can just go out and figure out who guys are. And if you guys won 32 games and had a few winning streaks, people would be really excited and there would be no like, oh, well, we have to make the playoffs or we have to do anything. Like everyone still knows what it is. And that's not a position that a lot of teams get to be in when they add lottery talent, you know, a few years in a row. Four years in a row you've had a top 10 pick? Yeah.
Yep, been a few years in a row.
So I think the Pistons are in a good spot to kind of see who guys are. And like this conversation will probably to your point earlier about Sadiq Bey, this conversation will probably be very different a year from now when we get to see some NBA samples. But like I dig this team. Like the Pistons will be a team that I watch a lot more this year than last year, because like I think a lot of these guys are in the league for real, and I don't know if they'll be together as Pistons or how much of this core is going to be part of the next competing team. But you guys have accumulated quite a few interesting players.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the fun thing as well. Like you said, it's just they have a legit young core right now of about 6 to 8 players on their team. They got obviously Cade, they got Jane Ivey, they got Jalen Duren, they got Sadiq, Isaiah Stewart, Marvin Bagley. And then we didn't even mention the former 7th overall pick, Killian Hayes, who's
played. I was waiting for him to come up.
Well, see, this is the thing. So listen, I'll give you a quick sec to say something about him. The reason why I didn't bring him up, just to give you a reason. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to lie to you guys. You guys listen, you guys know why I didn't bring him up. Because I'm very high on Killian Hayes. I still believe in him a lot. I really do believe in him. So I try to avoid asking people because I know it's going to be, oh, he sucks, he's trash, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I get it. But I believe in him. Now, if you want to take a chance to say something about him, you go ahead. But I still believe in Killian.
So a couple things on Killian, right? I mean, again, I'm not a big NBA draft guy, so I talk to my people about the draft. And coming in to year one, Kevin O'Connor was bullish about Killian Hayes. And we had a conversation in the DMs. I mean, he was touting him on the timeline. He was his number one prospect. But we had a conversation in the DMs, too, where he was really hyping him up. And his odds for rookie of the year were like plus 1150 or something like that, or plus 1250. So I was very heavily invested in Killian Hayes coming out being the rookie of the year. Obviously, he didn't look good in the time he was out there, and he got hurt. Can't begrudge him. Last year in Summer League, watching Killian Hayes, and having a conversation with Nick Henkel. I don't know what he's up to these days, but he was a big member of Pistons Twitter at the time. And he was telling me, oh, like, he's shown so much growth. And I was watching him in Summer League. I'm like, man, this guy sucks. This guy sucks at both ends. What is happening? This guy doesn't look like an NBA player. So, you know, towards at times last year, like, you saw, like, he has promise as a defensive player. He was starting not to look as lost, but I still don't think too highly of him. It sucks that it turns out that way with the number 7 overall pick, and he's still a young kid. So who knows? But yeah, I gotta imagine the Killian Hayes Island is not bumping at this moment. The real estate is cheap.
The real estate, I think, is cheap. It definitely is. Just my overall thoughts on Killian, then we'll wrap up the podcast and give you an idea of how I feel about him. I think he has incredible promise as a defender. I think he was probably easily the Pistons' best defender last year outside of, like, one of the big guys in Isaiah Stewart. He's a tremendous defender. I feel like he has potential to be, I think, an all-NBA guard kind of defender. You can't switch off of him. You switch him onto a big guy, he holds his own. He rips a lot of guys up. There's a few highlights of him ripping KD off when he gets switched on to KD down the post. He's strong for his size. He's 6'5", 6'8", wingspan with 220. So he's a strong guy. You can't really switch him onto big guys and get away with it. He's good in the passing lanes. He's smart with rotations. I really like him defensively. Offensively, he's really struggled with scoring the basketball. I think a lot of it boils down to confidence. He doesn't really, for a large majority of his career thus far, he's really struggled with confidence and going to the rim and looking to score. He's just looking to pass way too often, which he's probably the best passer on the team. He got great vision, but it's hard to utilize that when you can't leverage the defense to your scoring or really get into the paint like that. So that was a struggle for him. But the thing is, I go back to the fact that he's only played 92 games in his career. When he first got drafted to the Pistons, it wasn't like he was given the keys to be able to run the offense. He was playing with a clearly destroyed Blake Griffin, a Derrick Rose, and Jeremy Grant. Then he hurts his hip. He comes back from a hip injury, plays like 10 games after a hip injury, with Jeremy Grant really trying to take over and show he's the number one guy. Then going into the next offseason, you think, oh, he's going to get the keys to be able to do what he wants. Nope. Then they draft Kate Cunningham. Now he's shifting from the main ball handler to an off-ball guy. I feel like he just had a lot of things change in his career, a lot of things not go his way. He's been dealt, I feel like, a pretty bad hand so far. But when he was brought off the bench for the Pistons, this happened, I believe, the last 13 games of the season. He averaged 10 points a game, 4 assists, 44% from the field. And if you go over the last 11 games, he averaged 11 points a game on 46% from the field. So as the season went on, he started to look a little bit better. Amari Sankofa came out. He's a beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. He came out with an article like 4 weeks into the Pistons, bringing him off the bench. His rim frequency was up by about 20%. His rim finishing was up about 10%. So he started to gain some confidence. We started to see him get to the rim more. It started to look like he liked being able to have the ball in his hand a little bit more off the bench. So we'll see what happens. I'm a believer in Killian. He only has 92 games of sample size. I think we're going to see the best version of him this upcoming season, but I think this is definitely his do or die or sink or swim season with at least the Pistons. Maybe another team gives him a chance after, but I think this is his season to sink or swim for Detroit.
Yeah, he because of where he was drafted and how he was a prospect, if he flames out this year, he'll have a couple more stops. But it's definitely make or break. But again, to your point, like, his role is going to change again this year. So, like, how much time is he spending at the one? How much time is he spending at the two behind the two guards we talked about earlier? And, like, again, he can't shoot. And even in that 10-game sample or whatever, he shot, like, 26% from three. I don't know. Like, if you can't space as a rotation guard in the NBA and no one fears you getting to the rack, which, you know, in that 10-game sample did it better, but it's tough. It's tough out there to be a guard if you can't score space.
No, yep, I agree. This will be a big year for Killian Hayes, a definitely do-or-die year for him. I'm a believer. I think he can do it. We'll see what happens. Josh, I want to thank you for coming on, man. It was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed listening. Make sure you guys go follow Josh on Twitter, at Josh Eberle. Again, you can find him on Hoops Mag, NBA Canada, Sports News, FanSided. Also, he's hosting live NBA chats over on Spotify. You can find him at all those places. Again, Josh, thank you for coming on, man. I want to thank you guys for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. Make sure you guys hit that subscribe button over at the YouTube channel, at Lockdown Pistons. Leave a 5-star review, whatever podcast platform you listen to this on. Until next time, I'll see you guys later. And peace out, everybody.